This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you. In your town, your suburb.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
If you travel and you're on the road for work and you're a woman, are there safe, clean places for you to go to the toilet? A Rail, Tram and Bus Union survey has found that 73% of their female workers suffered health issues, basically due to inadequate toilet facilities. 4 out of 5 women in this survey said that they resorted to some kind of dangerous or undignified coping strategy, even things like deliberately dehydrating. So this is Kathy Birch. You may have heard her on Early AM, and she's been in the transport industry for years.
One of the things I do when I arrive at site in my car is to plan carefully where I park. So I've got a privacy screen if I use the front ledge of my driver's door to perch on while I have a wee there. So I would then have the driver's door open and the back door open, which creates a screen around me. If I'm caught and it's raining really hard, I'll use a bucket I keep in my car.
It's quite confronting, isn't it? So if you're on the road for a living, if you travel a lot for a living and you're a woman, how hard is it for you just to go to the toilet and to feel safe going to the toilet? Also coming up this hour, the rise of Morleys and Dawleys. What's that? Well, it's your parents going on schoolies. So is it sensible and needed, or is it just helicopter parental overkill?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So this is quite confronting, but it's important, and unfortunately it's a reality. So a new report has just been released, and we're going to speak to the author of that report in just a moment. But it found that female transport workers have been forced to hold in their urine, remove tampons next to their vehicle, or use buckets to relieve themselves. And this is due to filthy, unsafe bathrooms when they're travelling for work. This has come out from the Rail, Tram and Bus Union. It surveyed 821 women who work in this sector. The report is called It's a Bloody Mess. And it's found everything from women suffering health problems like urinary tract infections, dehydration and stress. If this is something that you've experienced, the lengths that you have to go to, whether or not you stopped working in this sector as a result, and also if there are any solutions, you can text through as well, 0437 774 774. Libby Patton is a subcontractor in agriculture, and we've also spoken to you over the years, Libby, as a truck driver, someone that works in large heavy haulage. Were you surprised, unfortunately, Libby, by some of the details that have been reported here?
No, actually, not surprised at all.
So what's the reality been for you when you are on the road?
It is tricky. You have to plan ahead. It's not a matter of just jumping on the road and heading to your next drop off or wherever it is you've got to work. You have to think about, you know, where you're going to be able to pull up to actually go to the toilet.
Is it that there's not enough toilets, or that the toilets are just gross?
Oh, it's just disgusting. Yeah. But it's not well kept. I think there could be a bit more done around the scheduling of the cleaning. Like, you know, some public toilets you go to and you can see that they've been cleaned at 6 o'clock, but they've had 6,000 people through there since then. So once a day is just not enough.
I wonder whether there's been a decline of rest stops and travel rest stops over the years, Libby. I know that you've been in this profession for a very long time. We've seen even the role of service stations change, what they offer, what they don't offer. Just driver rest stops, do they even exist anymore? Not just for truck drivers, but for travellers in general.
I feel like some of those revive spots have been, I just don't know if they've got the funding behind them anymore, because a lot of them seem to be shut. And as for going to to say, like, to pick somewhere other than a public stop, one of your best spots is to actually jump on to a Facebook site, like a Grey Nomads Facebook site, because those people are on the roads a lot more than even someone in the transport injury industry, and you can normally find clean and decent and female-friendly, knowing where all the travellers are going.
Straight away, Libby, as soon as I started to talk about this, the response on the text line was, well, this is an issue for men as well. Don't men also, you know, deserve and appreciate equally clean and safe toilet facilities? Why is this different for women, do you think?
I'll actually agree with them. I just think the public system in general is disgusting for both males and females. I think maybe the difference between men and women is that, you know, females do have a monthly cycle. There is other things that they could be dealing with. It could be, you know, their own personal issues, whether they do have a UTI or something like that. You know, there's a lot of other things that happens with females' body that men don't have. As simple as that. But still, yeah. Both
whether it be sanitary bins, facilities. Yeah, that's right, or even toilet paper, for example.
Yeah, or lack of toilet paper.
Libby, thank you. I guess just finally, because we're going to speak to the Rail and Tram Bus Union next about the survey, but what can be done, do you think, Libby? And is it part of the reason? Do you drive as often as you used to now as a truck driver?
I'm not in a truck as much as I used to be, but I'm travelling full-time between contracts in ag. And honestly, I just think if you're going to provide a public service, then just keep the bastard clean. It's not that hard. Macca's seems to be able to clean theirs every hour, so why can't state public toilets?
Libby, thank you. Always good to speak with you. Take care. Libby Patton is a subcontractor in agriculture, also drives heavy haulage. 1300 222 774. Public toilet availability if you travel, in particular if you're a woman. Do you feel safe? Are they clean enough? And has it had an impact on your health? Has it stopped you working in that profession in some way? Chops in Reservoir, morning.
Morning, how are you going there?
Good. What did you want to say?
Look, I've been working as a driver for about 7 or 8 years now, mostly in inner city, through all the burbs and stuff. So I do like 200 Ks a day on average.
Wow, yep.
And only about a year or 2 years ago, I've discovered that there's an app called the National Public Toilet Map, and you can actually download it on your phone. And whilst you're on the road, you can kind of like zoom in. It works like a map. You can zoom in and it kind of highlights where public toilets are. You can click on it and it says if it's got disabled, what time they're open for, what sort of stuff. It kind of helps. But the reality is that I'm also, as a male driver, like you can't find good, clean toilets.
Yeah.
Anywhere really in the city. They're always pretty gross. There's never any dunny paper in them. You know, like I myself am guilty of resorted to having to pee in a bottle every now and then.
Oh,
it's just not dignified. It's not dignified in many ways. And as we have female staff as well, and for them it's even harder. Like I appreciate what they have to go through, because it's actually quite tricky, because a lot of people who work as drivers, you know, they're essential service drivers, and they've got to get out of their way to use a public toilet. They can't just, oh, you know what, we've got one down the back hall at work, we'll just go there. We actually have to stop, find a place to over, hope it's not occupied or being cleaned or, you know, out for repairs, whatever it is. Yeah, I've used Bunnings many times. COVID was tricky because you had to go to McDonald's or whatever, and they're all closed. Everything's shut. You had to actually only use public toilets then. But
have you found it? How many years have you been driving, Chuck?
Eight now. I'm on my eighth year.
Yeah. Right. And is it getting worse?
It's never really gotten better. I can't say.
Yeah, so it's just been bad the whole time.
And every now and then you might be lucky and you'll find one. You're like, oh, this one looks like it's just been cleaned. But generally they're pretty dicey. It's not the best.
Oh, man, I'm sorry that that's been your experience, because it's...
That's right.
Yeah, it's nothing. People take for granted, you know, oh, I'm just popping to the loo. You take that for granted when you're at work, and it shouldn't matter whether you're mobile or in an office. Good to hear from you. Thank you. Helen's in the city. Hi, Helen.
Hi.
What's your experience been?
I'm a nurse in one form or another and have been... And you know, wearing, some of us are in uniform, the role I'm in, you know, not anymore, but yeah, the lack of public toilets is absolutely horrendous. No toilet paper, there's often nowhere to properly wash your hands either. And, you know, a lot of us, we can't be seen going into a shopping centre or into Bunnings to go to the toilet because it looks like we're slacking on the job. And it's getting worse.
Oh, Helen, it's not a great line, so I'm going to say goodbye. But, I mean, yeah, that's the other thing we haven't mentioned, right? Hand soap. I remember using a public toilet once and it was clean and there was soap. I was like, oh, my goodness, there's soap in there. This is unbelievable. Ruth's in Warrnambool. Hi, Ruth.
Oh, hello, Rochelle. Look, this is a little bit sort of off the track, but it's something relevant to the situation, Rochelle. I've got a friend who works for a urologist, and I was mentioning to her about the problem of not finding toilets, not being able to use toilets, et cetera, et cetera. And she said, look, there's a card. And she said, I'll give it to you. Now, it's a little yellow card put out by the National Continence Helpline. And on the back of it, and this is what you show any business, anybody, on the back it says toilet help card.
Mm-hmm.
Can you please help? I have a medical condition and need to access a toilet quickly. I've only used it twice, but it's been a lifesaver.
Yeah, so right. So if that's if you go into a venue or into somewhere where they say, no, it's only for paying customers or whatever
anywhere.
It may be. Yeah.
Anywhere. And I consider that somebody that's absolutely busting for the toilet and can't find one, I consider that's a medical condition in itself.
There's nothing worse, Ruth, is it? Thank you. That's good to know. There might be others out there that know that they can get that little thing on their card. But there's so many people that are in this situation. This message, Rochelle, I have a half roll of toilet paper in a plastic bag in my man bag. I've had it for the last 7 years. It travels with me overseas, with me every day. I carry it. I use it. It's been used by my partners and others. It's just not rocket science. Is that where we're at? At society where, like Ross, we actually have to BYO toilet paper just so we can go to the toilet when we need to. Leanne Holmes is the National Vice President of the Rail, Tram and Bus Union. Your research, Leanne, looked into female transport workers. 73% had some kind of issue, whether it be health-related, stress-related, or maybe leaving the profession and the industry altogether. Is this more of an issue for women or is it across the board?
Well, good morning. Thank you. Well, good afternoon. Thank you for having me. Look, you know, this survey has been done with our women members. So it is definitely a women-led, women-driven campaign. However, safe, clean, accessible toilets is an issue for all of our members in the RTBU and across the transport industry as a whole.
Whose responsibility is it?
Well, we are, you know, in the end, we are seeking a pretty basic workplace right. And that is, like I've just said, a clean, safe, accessible toilet. Mm. And, you know, we surveyed our members across the board. So we are talking all of our industries and across all of the states and territories. So, but in the end, it really is up to the employer to provide those facilities.
But how can an employer do that if you're on the road?
Well, you know, I mean, some of the facilities that do exist, we're talking about. So having them, as your previous callers have mentioned, making sure that they are clean, that they are safe, that they have been
within workplaces, you mean?
Well, within workplaces, but look at, you know, we'll look at bus depots or buses, for example. They use facilities that are out at different terminuses.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about those being clean and safe, as you've just said, with hand soap and toilet paper and that sort of thing. We're also talking about our locomotives. You know, nearly half of our respondents talked about the fact that they had no access to sanitary bins. So, you know, that
is if you're a train driver, for example.
Yeah, that's right. So on our freight locos, for example, there's toilets there, but do they have sanitary bins? Not all the time. How are those sanitary bins cleaned and emptied and who by? So that's the sort of stuff that we're also
seeking.
What
about at the train stations? There's a text here, and I would agree with this. I remember the last time I went to the toilet at Flinders Street. It was disgusting. And I mean, this one says, what about railway stations? They're disgusting. Even Southern Cross, Flinders Street stations are gross. I couldn't agree more. So let's look at, from a transport perspective, out of 10, if you had to rate the toilet situation, at whether it be the big stations like the city or North Melbourne to the smaller suburban stations, are they up to scratch?
Well, I mean, we can only, I mean, I, you know, we're looking at it from a national scope, and our survey was done anonymously. So we were, you know, it wasn't sort of specific to personal, you know, work locations in states. But in general, the answer is absolutely not. They're not up to scratch. They are certainly not, you know, like you said earlier, we've got members who are deliberately dehydrating themselves because they know that during their shift they're either not going to have access to a toilet at all, or the one that they do have access is just too feral to use. So I think everywhere across the industry, it doesn't matter which part of the industry, really has to step up here. It's 2025, and like we're saying, you know, a clean, safe, accessible toilet is a pretty basic workplace right.
So when we're talking about public toilets on the side of the road, I'm actually trying to visualise it and say a drive from Melbourne to Bendigo now, and if you needed to go to the loo, like, is there even, other than stopping at a servo, is there even a public toilet to stop at? I mean, that would be the responsibility of the local shire or local council. So when you do a survey like this and when you're talking about workplace rights, sometimes it would be the council's responsibility to ensure that public toilets are up to scratch.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, obviously you've spoken to the first caller who works in the trucking industry, which is obviously a different space than us, but we stand in solidarity with all transport workers. So, and we are absolutely willing to sit down with industry, council, government. We're in Canberra today actually talking to MPs about this national standard that we are seeking so that all transport workers have accessible, safe, clean toilets.
I mean, there's lots of different industries. People now are saying it's not just public toilets, it's also the premises. My partner is an on-site worker, and sometimes he's been refused access to the premises toilets because he's not an employee. And we've spoken to a lot of, we know there's a big push to have females enter construction and enter the trades industry, but the toilets are just not up to scratch for women there as well. Leanne, it's really ignited a big conversation. Thank you.
Excellent. And thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
No worries. Leanne Holmes, who's the National Vice President of the Rail, Tram and Bus Union. I really can't keep up with them. Liz says, just recently on Saturday, I was travelling by train with my 77-year-old mum. We were waiting to board at Caroline Springs at about 5 o'clock. My mum needed to go to the toilet. They were locked. The PSO said they couldn't unlock them. This was a very uncomfortable situation for my mum.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So the rise of Morleys and Dooleys, do you even know what I'm talking about? This is the idea of parents going on schoolies with their kids. So they've been given names, Morleys and Dooleys, so mums and dads accompanying their kids on schoolies. What do you think? Would you? Should you? Maybe you are. And is there a way to do it so that your child has independence and can have fun? Maybe you can turn it into a bit of a holiday? Or is it really just overcrowding them? Is it overshadowing an experience that should be independent, that should be for them? What do you think? Are you going? 1-300-222-774. Margie Osmond is the Chief Executive of the Tourism and Transport Forum. And Margie, you've been looking into this idea of Morleys and Dooleys, mums and dads going on schoolies with their kids. Is this a relatively new thing?
Well, it's been happening for a couple of years now, but it's an interesting manifestation of more parents saying, well, getting kids past the HSC or getting them to the end of their school years has been a journey for us too, and we deserve a break.
See, now you say it like that, it seems to make sense.
Makes perfect sense, doesn't it?
Because your first instincts would be, oh, helicopter parent to the max. This is just let your child take that first step of independence.
Yeah. Look, the feedback we get from it is that essentially what happens is mum or dad, or mum and dad, or mum and a group of her friends, or dad and a group of his friends, they take a holiday in the same place. They might not travel together. They certainly won't be staying together, but they'll be in the same vicinity. And what lots of kids say is they've got their autonomy to do whatever it is that they're planning on doing for schoolies, but there is some comfort in knowing that mum or dad is close by just in case.
So as a result now, are we seeing this as more almost of a family holiday as opposed to school is?
Well, no. I think it still maintains the spirit of schoolies, but I think the issue here too, as I said in the beginning, Morley's itself is having a bit of a, this is their moment of freedom too. So I think for a lot of parents who are going away on these trips, while they're there to support their kids, they're also recognising that there's a moment of celebration for themselves as well, and that they're facing the future potentially of being empty nesters or whatever else it might be. And it's a celebration moment.
So are you finding groups, let's say mums, that are saying, okay, let's, three of us, I'm imagining my girlfriend's here, we're going, you know what, if all of our kids are going on this, why don't we all go as well? If, are you finding that you've got, say, three or four mums going alongside their kids and having a group holiday?
Look, less so them all being together, much more so them being in different accommodation in the same town or on the Gold Coast or Lawn or wherever else it might be. On rare occasions, I think they're probably kind of turning it into a family holiday, but that sort of is not really the schoolies concept. This is a rite of passage moment. I mean, I do think that one of the things that this will be changing for the tourism marketplace is that something like, somewhere like the Gold Coast, I mean, schoolies can inject as much as $48 million into the coast in a single hit, but that doesn't benefit high-end dining or some of the more expensive experiences. Well, when mum and dad is going along, I think we're going to see a significant increase in the usage of some of those other experiences that kids wouldn't be engaged in, but mum and dad may very well be.
I just have this image, like, we know that younger people now are quite, they're more sensible than, say, their parents. So, the no, I'm serious, right? I have this image of the kids behaving really well, and it's the mums that maybe, or the dads, but I'm thinking groups of women together.
Anything is possible. And you are quite right, because one of the things that we have seen over the last couple of years,
mums behaving badly.
Well, no, kids drinking less.
Kids drinking less and mums behaving badly, like where the kids are like, Mum, I don't want to have to look after you.
This makes for a hot spot, doesn't it? Look, I think, and it's a bit of a global trend. We're seeing it all over the place when kids are sort of getting to the end of their school year and having some sort of celebration. You're seeing a really significant drop in the need for alcohol, and depending upon where they go. So, like, the Sunshine Coast will tell you that kids go there and do all sorts of wellness things and go to the beach and do stretching and read books and drink smoothies.
Well, if our text line has anything to say with it, it says, leave the kids alone. You've got to be kidding. So, you know, it's interesting. I'd love to hear from someone that's going and making it work. Margie, thank you. Margie Osmond, Chief Executive of the Tourism and Transport Forum. This, what an idiot mumsy baby idea. Straight to the point, really. If you're going with your kids to schoolies because you're so worried about your kids, none of you should. This is absolutely stupid. And another that says, this is just embarrassing and the reason why Gen Z have got anxiety and no resilience. Don't go with them. You've got to be kidding, says another. Morleys and Dooleys will be the first to complain once they get upset that they don't get all of the things that they need. Keep those texts coming through. But we've also been talking about the state of public toilets and how that impacts you. I guess if you're a woman in particular, especially if you travel and if you travel for work, but also if it just impacts you in everyday life. Do you have access to clean public toilets? Jen's in Hampton. Hi.
Hi, Rhys.
Good morning. What have you experienced?
Look, I've just been overseas for 6 months, mainly in Europe, but also in Morocco and Oman. And every public toilet is better than anything I've seen in Australia, which is an enormous indictment on us as a country.
So what makes them better, Jen? How are they better?
So firstly, they tend to be cleaner and they tend to have toilet paper available. A lot of them have soap, I found.
God forbid.
I particularly noticed in train stations and airports that they are really keeping a reasonable standard in most of them. And I mean, it used to be that you'd go to France and you'd dread the toilets in France. Well, they'd knock ours into a cocked tap, frankly, now.
Lots of people are talking about getting back from overseas, Jen, and they're saying that you actually, you know, had to pay. Are we at the point where if we want them clean, then they have to be privately run and you have to pay for that privilege?
I would be so happy to pay. So in a lot of the train stations, they are a euro and they've all got swipes on them, and they are so clean and they're looked after, and it's really worthwhile. I mean, the country that amazed me was Oman. I mean, in Oman, they've got public toilets spread around, and they have a gang of people that go around and keep them clean.
Yeah, I wonder what the temperature of the room would be if we would be happy to pay, say, a dollar, right, to be able to use a public toilet. And
I'd happily do it.
Yeah. I'm 1-300-222-774. Would you be happy to pay a dollar in order for the public toilet to be open, first things first, to be clean, for there to be soap, and for there to be toilet paper? Would you pay a dollar?
This is where the conversation begins.
The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
And lots of reaction to Moorleys and Dooleys, so parents going on schoolies with their kids. Sue in Seaford, I like this, Sue. Thank you. It says, I think we should just let families do what families want to do. Far out. The aggression advice on the text line is just so ick. So if you're finding that it works for you, I'd love to hear from you as well. Are you turning it into somewhat of a holiday? Or if you're 17, 18, do you like the idea of mum or dad somewhere in the background, just being there if you need them? 1-300-222-774. Well, on Saturday night, Sharon Van Etten, who's an American singer-songwriter, so she performed in Melbourne. I know lots of people sort of in my circle who were there. But Rosa, one of our breakfast producers, was in the audience, and she spoke to me about how she gave, and Sharon Van Etten gave a shout-out to Ben Shuri. Now, he is the very well-known chef from Attica. So Sharon Van Etten spoke about this dish that Ben Shuri made for her that was like a version of one of her childhood dishes. And she spoke about how emotional it made her and how it brought her to tears. So Rosa Bless, the producer, always being the producer, recorded this. So you should be able to hear it clear enough. It's just a little bit, but pay, take into consideration that this was recorded at a crowded gig and on an iPhone. But this is Sharon Van Etten talking about her childhood dish and I guess the memory that it unlocked and how emotional it made her.
Dread going home, but it was like my comfort food, and it brought back his hard memories, but beautiful memories, and reminding myself why I'm here and what got me here, and having somebody see me in this way. I broke down and I cried while eating, and it was an incredible, beautiful experience. And thank you so much for bringing us to a beautiful space. It is so special.
So if you think about childhood dishes that would make you emotional, what is it? Mine is definitely curried egg sandwiches, you know, that bright fluoro yellow of the egg and the mustard powder, the cheap, soft supermarket bread, and I'm instantly transported to my grandparents' house. And I'm sitting at their kitchen table, brown laminate table. In front of me, there's a brightly coloured plastic mug that's filled with orange concentrate. I can see my nan. She's dressed immaculately. I can even smell her fragrance. She always wore Red Door. And that memory is really strong. And the love and the emotion that came from such a simple, everyday curried egg sandwich. 1-300-222-774. Why do some foods make us emotional? Rita Ehrlich is a food writer. Rita Ehrlich, apologies. Rita, why do some foods, like a curried egg sandwich or mashed potato, why do they make us cry?
Oh, because of the people who made it for us. Because I don't think anyone cries about a dish that was served by someone they loathed. It's the love. And it's all the associations. I mean, for me, it's, and now for my family, because the traditions endure, it's roast chicken and it's my mother's apple cake.
Mm.
Which is now my apple cake because I've had to modify it a bit. Everyone, I think, has a family dish. And it's associated with good times, with happy times. I don't think anyone would burst into tears of joy, remembering a dish that they were served or they ate when they were miserable.
And it can take you by surprise sometimes, and it might be smelling something or tasting something and you're instantly transported and you're like, oh, my goodness, I'm feeling a bit teary, and it sort of came from nowhere. Oh,
it's always the smell. It's the smell more than anything.
Mm.
And the smell of things unlocks memories the way few other things can. And there's also that, you know, that lovely thing of remembering being happy, being secure, and the feeling of, oh, someone's cooked this for me.
Mm, yeah, the love and the security that's wrapped around it. Absolutely. Rita, also today, you know, I read the really sad news that one of our most celebrated Australian chefs, she was so influential, but Sky Ginzel has died. She was in London. She was only 62 years of age.
That was terrible to discover, and that she died of a very rare and aggressive skin cancer. And she was young, 62, still young for a chef.
Oh, absolutely.
But her legacy is huge. She more than any other English-speaking chef, I think, got us all thinking about seasonal, local, and fair. She was a great promoter of fair food, food that was produced well, that was good for the environment. That was what the slow food movement was all about.
Yeah, she was really instrumental in that, wasn't she?
Yeah,
and for women being taken seriously in kitchens, being in charge.
Yep, because that keeps changing. I think there have always been great women chefs, but from time to time, they are not taken seriously.
She even was known for, she received Michelin stars, and she referred to it as a curse almost, and spoke very openly about, well, thank you for the Michelin star, but then the stress and the association that comes with that.
Oh, absolutely, because everyone's expectations change. Everyone goes into a greatly lauded or prized restaurant with the idea, so is this mouthful going to be the best I've ever tasted? And so the expectations make it very, very difficult for restaurants.
It's a sad day for the food world and, of course, for her family. So our thoughts go out to all of those who knew her and loved her and worked with her as well. Rita, just finally, I know we were talking at the beginning about the idea of food and association and nostalgia. Did you know that today is National Fairy Bread Day?
No, I didn't.
Neither did I.
And how extraordinary that it should be National Fairy Bread Day.
When was the last time you ate fairy bread?
Oh, at a kid's party about 2 years ago.
If it's there, we are mere mortals after all, right? We only have so much strength.
Now, here's a question for everyone. Does fairy bread bring tears to your eyes? Does everyone get nostalgic about fairy bread? I'm not sure they do. I think it has to be a bit more substantial than that.
I think the idea of it is better than the reality of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd say to everyone who's thinking about cooking or not cooking, I think just cook, because that's the way you make memories. If we're all going to have lovely memories of food in the future, we have to have people cooking food we love.
I couldn't agree more. As I said, the food straight away, when I thought about the food that makes me emotional, it was a really cheap, brightly coloured curried egg sandwich. You know, the type with that Keen's mustard and the sandwich bread, but it was really fresh. And the thing that makes it so special was the love that was poured into it, and that my nan knew that I loved them, and she would have one waiting for me when I got home from school, and it was just so special. Yeah. Rita, lovely to speak with you. Thank you so much.
You too. All the best.
Bye-bye. Rita Ehrlich, who is a food writer, also reminiscing on Sky Ginzel, who passed away age 62. If you've just joined us, my name's Rochelle. This is The Conversation Hour, 19 minutes away from midday. We've been talking about the state of public toilets. Research has just been done into women who work in the transport industry, who travel for a living. 73% of them just have to end up either not going to the toilet or really doing something that fundamentally they don't want to do, like peeing on the side of the road or making some kind of makeshift screen so that they can use a bathroom. And it's got us talking about the state of public toilets and whether or not you would be happy to even pay a dollar. Let's say they become privatised. Would you pay a dollar for the public toilet to be open, to be clean, to have hand soap and to have toilet paper? This, why should we have to pay for public toilets? This is a basic right which every city should provide. Paying for toilets is not an option for all, and we should have access to a clean toilet no matter what. Jackie's called through. Jackie's in Kyabram. Hi, Jackie.
Hi there. Rochelle, I just want to defend the small country towns. I travel a lot, but I, because of where I have to go, I go cross-country, which means I'm actually crossing over the most of the big highways. So I go down through sort of Maryborough, Beaufort, Skipton, Lexton. The toilets there are brilliant.
Are they?
The small, and Derren Allum, I mean, I've never, ever come across a dirty toilet in Derren Allum. And I travel these small towns a lot.
Do you know where there's a good one too? Is Sea Lake. The loos at Sea Lake are really good.
Yes.
But and there's a fish and chip shop and an op shop.
Yeah, as soon as you get on the major highways,
yeah, right,
the toilets are just, I mean, I'd rather use the bush. I just want to ring and say thank you to the small country towns.
You raise a really good point, Jackie. So, I mean, we don't always have time to do this, right, which is to either divert through, to not take the bypass and to go through the small country towns. But there's probably a better chance of there being a really nice, clean public toilet in that town as opposed to the ones on the freeways and the highways. So if we have time, and then you might actually spend a little bit of money in that town. Like as I said, I stopped at the loo at Sea Lake, but also got myself a couple of potato cakes and popped into the local op shop.
Yeah. But they look after their toilets. Yeah. They really do.
Really so, good point.
I just wanted to give a thumbs up to the, because, yeah, it's the major highways that are absolutely disgusting. Yeah.
Jackie, good on you. Thank you. Lynette's in Mans Beach. Hi, Lynette.
Hello.
What do you think? Would you pay to use a public toilet?
Absolutely. I've just come back earlier this year from Europe as well and had to pay everywhere we went. But, you know, we travel around Australia in our caravan and I think we also have to take some responsibility as users.
Yeah.
Because some of the mess that's in there isn't from not being cleaned. It's just from people being grots.
Being disgusting, and, yeah.
Yeah, and if it was your toilet at home, you'd clean it. If you made a mess, you'd clean it. So, you know, maybe some of the responsibility goes back to the everyday users. And I get that on the busy highways, they are not how we'd like to see them. So, yeah, let's make them pay toilets and user pay, and maybe then there will be money to clean toilets.
Lynette, good to get your ideas on this. Thank you. Maybe, do you agree? Would you pay on the major highways to use the loo, or should we, if we have time, divert into those small towns where the toilets probably are going to be cleaner and then you get to spend a little bit of time in that town as well? Coming up in just a moment, another study. However, this one has looked at school principals. And it turns out that this one's not great either in terms of the emotional well-being and just some of the pressures that are put on to school principals. So if you're a school principal, you're going to want to hear this.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
We're sort of creating a little spontaneous list here of gorgeous regional towns that have good quality public toilets. I know that there is an app that you can download, but Di says, Rish Lock in South Gippsland has a lovely toilet block surrounded by beautiful gardens. There you go. And I've got another one that's saying Lock. Just as I said that, Sue in Williamstown says the cleanest loo is Lock in Gippsland. It's always pristine. every time. What if we started a competition, you know, like the cleanest public toilet? And maybe that would try and get people, encourage people to get their loos up to scratch. Anyhow, just an idea. So Jane Wilkinson is a professor of school and education, culture and society at Monash University. And Jane, you were a lead researcher in a project that's titled Invisible Labour. And that's looking at the emotional labour of school principals. So it was a national study. You spoke to 256 public school principals. And Jane, what you found was actually pretty confronting, that principals reported everything from insomnia, nightmares, stress, exhaustion, physical illness, trauma, PTSD. This is really confronting to hear this about those who are at the top, who lead so many of our state schools. What prompted the research?
Thanks, Rochelle. So what prompted the research was that we'd done a small-scale study a few years ago. We were really interested in understanding the role that public schools and public school principals might play in building more socially cohesive school communities. And one of the things that came out of that was the emotional labour of the principals. So these were principals who were doing fantastic work bringing together polarised, fragmented communities. But it was work that they were doing that was above and beyond their principal role descriptions. And it was exhausting for them, both very satisfying but also exhausting. And that's what got us interested in trying to understand what is it about the emotional labour of principals and the invisibility of the work that they do. And that was what started the study.
So when you say above and beyond, what are we talking about?
Well, what I mean is that when you look at a principal role description, typically it'll talk about important things like leading the learning of the children and making sure that the academic outcomes are, you know, good, school governance, all those sorts of things. What role descriptions tend to leave out, which is absolutely crucial, is the caring responsibilities, the relational aspects of the job. But these are absolutely fundamental and they take time to build, and they also involve a considerable amount of, as we call it, emotional labour, which means that principals are both having to manage their own emotions while they manage the emotions of others. So to give you an example, if you've got a parent who's unhappy and crying and perhaps a bit aggressive in your room, plus you've got, you know, the teacher down in the classroom who's just having a difficult encounter with a student and a whole range of other things, but you can't be showing how you're feeling, which might be, I'd really like to put my feet up and, you know, have a stiff whiskey. You have to keep that professional calm mask. So what we're talking about is all the emotional management work that goes into being a principal. That's a really crucial aspect of their job, but it gets overlooked and ignored.
So this is very similar to what we're hearing with teachers, and the same reason why many have labelled it a mass exodus of teachers in particular across our state system. So is this just a flow-on effect of from that?
Look, I think there's the crucial difference, and it's absolutely true that teachers are also experiencing very similar issues. I think the crucial difference, however, is the principal is in charge of the school. They are made responsible for the, you know, the buck stops with them at their desk. So they're made responsible for everything that happens in that school. And so, you know, teachers obviously have a responsibility to the students in their care. Principals are responsible for everything in the school. So there's a level of, you know, kind of authority but also responsibility that goes with the role. The other thing I might mention, Rochelle, that's really important is that we specifically looked at government school principals, and not because non-government school principals aren't also going through similar emotional demands, but 88% of our most disadvantaged children go to government schools. And so our argument is there's a particular kind of edge, if you like, and intensity to the work that government school principals do, particularly in more poor and disadvantaged communities.
So what can be done? Because unfortunately, I don't think this would come as a shock to many people, which says a lot within itself. Mm-hmm. So what can be done? I mean, as more and more responsibility falls onto the school environment to raise happy and healthy children, how I can't see it changing, because the responsibilities get thrown, everything from social media to consent to you name it, every aspect, job training, skills ready, it all comes back to the leaders within our school.
That's right. So the positive news is that we know from the research that if principals feel supported and cared for by their employer, that that actually makes a crucial difference to how they feel about their role. The thing that I think is perhaps most telling and sad, which comes out in Report 4, which we'll release in March next year, is that quite a lot of the principals told us that they felt like they were being hung out to dry and thrown out under the bus by the various education departments across Australia. So the silver lining is employers, i.e. departments of education, can make a huge difference by providing service and care and support to principals rather than undercutting them. So what can flow from that? First of all, that you actually have someone who rings you and says, how are you? And listens, really listens to the principal, particularly after there's been a critical incident. Other things that can make a big difference are things like clinical supervision. So having someone who's not your line manager that you meet with regularly, and that's not just for inexperienced principals, it's principals across the spectrum, from the most inexperienced to the most experienced, because having that listening ear really helps. And I'm going to say the dirty word that no government ever wants to hear, but funding makes a huge difference. Mm. So the reality is that government schools in Australia are underfunded considerably, and they have been given, and it's great, that there's been a commitment from the federal government that funding will get up to the entitlement that it should be. But the reality is that's not going to be for 10 years, and that's 10 years of schools not getting the amount of support and care that they really need to do the crucial job that they do.
To just finally, Joan, do we have enough principals? Are they leaving at the same rate as teachers?
We're finding that principals, people are becoming more, less likely, I should say, to want to go into the principalship,
yeah, right,
because they're looking at it and saying, why would I do that?
Mm.
And so I think the concern for us is that it's at both ends. It's what they call the leaky pipeline. So it's people kind of voting with their feet and saying, no, I think I'll just stay at this level. I'm not going to go up to the principalship. It looks too unattractive. And then there's very good principals who are saying, I really don't feel supported. I want to leave. And we are certainly seeing principals, leaving at a rate that really is concerning. So this is where the investments in their mental health and support and care really can make a difference.
And people can get their hands on that research. I'm presuming if they sort of just throw that into their search engine, it's entitled, sure, Invisible Labour, Principles Emotional, yes, Labour in Volatile
That's
Times.
Right.
Jane, thank you.
Put Monash University in it, they'll find it straight away.
Great. Jane Wilkinson, Professor of School and Education, Culture and Society at Monash University. So if you do want to read that, it's called Invisible Labour. It's done by Monash University. Invisible Labour, Principles, Emotional Labour in Volatile Times. We've been talking about the state of public toilets, how it impacts you if you work, but then just generally, if you need to go to the loo, is there a clean, accessible public toilet near you? I had the random idea that maybe we should start a little bit of a competition and we can find some of the best, cleanest public toilets. Andy says, this is a great idea. Instead of tidy towns, tidy toilets. Andy, see, I just had the idea. You came up with the title. That's what it's about. And we're making a list. Liz says, a shout out to the Travellers Rest in Charlton, my childhood town. It's always clean. I bet you didn't know that one, Rish. I do know it now. And others, we've travelled around a lot. Absolutely would agree. And Lynn, you travel a lot as well. What have you noticed?
Well, we've travelled extensively in our caravan right around Australia, and especially across the Nullarbor and in Western Australia. We found a certain cohort of backpackers who hadn't brought enough money for accommodation with them, and they would go into the toilets, and we would actually see them unrolling the toilet paper and rolling it around their arm and just taking away a whole roll of toilet paper like that, and even bringing in their own plastic dispenser bottles and emptying the soap dispensers into them.
Oh, gosh, that's, yeah.
And they would brag about it and say, well, it's, we need toilet paper and soap. It's our right to take it.
Oh, that's a shame, Lynn, because the fact that there was toilet paper and soap there is pretty rare, turns out, these days. Good on you, Lynn. Safe travels. Raylene's in Essendon and she says, Rish, I travelled to Iceland last year. Public restrooms even supplied free sanitary products and they were all very clean. Wow, we've got to lift up our game. John's in Bendigo. G'day, John.
G'day, how are you?
What do you think? Would you pay a dollar to use a clean toilet?
I've experienced paid toilets when I was in Norway. I think the idea has a merit because of it costs money to look after these things, and some of the public toilets that we've got here in Bendigo are absolutely vile. Anyway, SMS has said, have a paid one next to the free one. That probably wouldn't work. It'll be like, why is that one clean, why is that one not? But you can have paid ones here and free ones over there.
Mm.
And have the paid ones looked after by a company. And, they can have that as advertising that, such and such company looks after it. And they look after it and make sure it's clean, whereas the free one is looked after by council. So people will get to know, if you want a clean toilet, go to the one run by Jill's Cleaners. Don't go to the one run by the council because it's crap.
And we've learnt lots today, John, if you get off the freeway or the highways and into the small towns. But it is interesting when you start to think about overseas and access to toilets in general, to public toilets. And then there's service stations where if you had to go in and use the loo and they would give you a key, but it was, attached to a thong or a brick or something ridiculous so that, I don't know why you didn't run away with it and just use it at your willy-nilly. Thank you, John. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Take care and we'll speak to you soon.